I needed a hook. That's what I said. I needed a hook. I knew I wanted to write, and I needed some hook to figure out what I was going to write about. And California Typewriter gave me that hook of writing about typewriters.
Welcome to the Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to listen to our little gab fest. We're just a group of folks who enjoy the heck out of typewriters and welcome you to our table. Sit back and enjoy the show, and away we go.
David always says it best here on Austin Typewriter Inc. podcast. Your West Coast host here, Bob Marshall, from that typewriter company, Typewriter Muse. We are very excited today to bring you the man who's found a way to take the analog and put it in a digital Typetown newsletter. Mr. Neil Barraclough is with us, and needless to say, he's got some good things to talk about. Neil, thanks for joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Nice to be here. I assume, I don't know if I'm correct or not, I assume I'm the first British voice on Austin Typewriter Inc. So
oh.
We've got a little bit of history here.
Yeah, that might be true. Boy, now we'll have to check the vaults. You're probably most certainly the most distinguished voice we've ever had on.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
I think we should start at the beginning. If the rest of you aren't clicked in or tuned in to Typetown, it's a great newsletter that I find in my email every so often. And Neil's been at it more than a year. Bringing us all the good stories, typewriters, where they've been, where they're going. Neil, we got to start at the beginning.
So I was a journalist for a long time in my old professional life. I stopped being a journalist in 2014. But for a long time afterwards, I was looking for something to write about that was outside of work. So I'm still a professional writer. I'm a copywriter. So I write marketing and advertising stuff. But that's writing for clients. That's work. That's, you know, the stuff that pays the bills. And I was looking for something that was fun to do, something outside of that that I could get my teeth into. November 2022, as we record this, but back in the summer of 2021, my wife and I moved to Toronto from the UK. And that was at the height of COVID. So we had a couple of weeks of quarantine, just kicking around in an apartment in downtown Toronto, not being able to move or go anywhere or do anything. So we had 2 weeks to kill. And in those 2 weeks, I stumbled across a recommendation for California Typewriter. So one night I suggested to my wife that we watch this documentary about typewriters, having had no interest or knowledge about typewriters whatsoever. And you can imagine the reaction that got. She kind of accepted her fate, rolled her eyes, questioned her life choices. And sat there in the corner, and I watched this this documentary and got the bug, big style. Suddenly, I was hooked, although I didn't know it at that stage. But it had lit a fire. There was something going off where I was trying to figure out. There's something in this. There's something interesting here. What can I do with it? And as I said, for a long time, I'd been hoping to kind of put together something outside of my professional work. And I needed the idea, the hook, the spark, and typewriters and California Typewriter gave me that. And a couple of months later, I sent out the first one and got more reaction than I ever imagined. And away we went.
So it seems that your wife is part of your process.
Well, actually, she doesn't know about it. She sat there, as I say, she sat there and rolled her eyes while I suggested we watch California Typewriter. And she kind of put up with it for 2 hours and then was desperate to dive into Netflix and watch something else by the
That's
time
wonderful.
It ended.
That's wonderful. I love that. Well, you get to put it out. Let's hear about the process start to finish and what it takes to do an online newsletter.
Yeah, well, so it's fortnightly. I think we've been fortnightly every issue, barring one or two where I've been ill or something like that. So the process is 13 days of sloth and doing nothing, and 1 day of panic. That's the general process. When I realise that one's got to go out the next day, I have various kind of Google alerts set up so I get notified when things about typewriters get published on online. You know, I troll through social media and things like that, and I have a dig around writing history. So basically, one of the reasons that I do this newsletter is obviously there's the fun and enjoyment of doing it, but it's also a self-education thing. You know, every week or every fortnight, I get to dive around and do a bit of reading about people that I maybe not might not know lots about, or, you know, I'm not some kind of literary expert from, 20th century literary expert. It's an education piece in myself. And I think that's probably why we've been able to keep going so long, is that I'm finding stuff out for myself. There's still that interest. And I hope that comes across in the actual writing. It's not just me preaching from on high, because generally most of the stuff that goes out in that newsletter 48 hours before it goes out, I didn't know myself. So it's, you know, it's as fresh to me as it is to the readers. I think that might be some of the reason why it seems to get a decent reaction.
That is really cool. And what's been your favorite thing to figure out about typewriters and the use of typewriters so far?
So there's been a couple. There's been, so each week or each issue, that, you know, I'll feature one or two kind of bigger authors and do bigger profiles on them. You know, we'll look at their life or their career, and you know, if I can find them commenting about the process of writing or about using typewriters, then that obviously goes up front. There was one a couple of months ago with a Spanish author, Javier Marias, and his had me laughing for a while. He's a famous Spanish author, and he also he died earlier this year, but before his death, for I think 20 years, he had a column, a weekly column in El País, which is I think the biggest national newspaper in Spain. And this started 20 years ago. And back then he used to type the column out and then fax it in. And this was kind of just about acceptable practice in journalism 20 years ago. That's around about the time I started in journalism. And I remember odd bits coming into the office that were faxed. So it was kind of outdated then, but just about acceptable. And I assume to someone of Javier's stature and profile, they were willing to deal with the inconvenience of receiving faxed copy that then needed to be inputted at their end. But as time went on, the sub-editors started to get a bit impatient with this, and they started to hint that perhaps he should file his copy electronically. And over time, he ignored those. And then over time, those hints became demands that this column had to come in electronically. So his response was that he took out his typewriter, he typed the column out as he always had done, and then to send it electronically, he took a picture of it on his mobile phone and WhatsApped the picture of this typed page, and that was how he submitted his copy every week. And that really kind of made me chuckle when I saw that. I thought that had to go in. Someone who was absolutely committed to typewriters right until the end.
Yeah, agreed. That's really cool.
So yeah, there was Javier like that, and then the other one that always caught my eye, partly because I grew up reading him as a teenager, was a British author, Terry Pratchett. And this had nothing to do with typewriters. You know, we covered it in the piece that I did about him. I covered the typewriters that he used to use and his impacts of writing typewriters, his experience of writing on typewriters. But the line from Terry Pratchett that still makes me laugh to this day was, "Give a man a fire and he's warm for a day." You know the old saying about teach a man to fish. Give a man a fish and he can eat for today. Teach him to fish and he can eat for the rest of his life. Terry Pratchett twisted that, and give a man a fire and he's warm for a day, but set fire to him and he's warm for the rest of his life. And that was the other line that I think I most enjoyed putting into type 10.
I think I need my typewriter serviced.
We can do that.
Okay, because I'm marginally sure it's dead. Can you resurrect it?
Yep, pretty sure.
You know what? Maybe I just need a totally different machine.
Well, we can definitely do that.
I don't even know where to buy all the stuff that goes with it.
Accessories? Yeah, we can do that.
This is fantastic.
Find us online, typewritermuse.com. on Instagram and Facebook at Typewriter Muse, and check out our YouTube channel at, you guessed it, Typewriter Muse.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
What has been your experience learning to type on a typewriter? Have you incorporated a typewriter into your writing process at all? Or
yeah, so I when I saw California Typewriter, I remembered we had a typewriter in my house when I was a kid in the mid to late 80s. I think my mum had a typewriter. I think it was my mum's, but I remember there being a small blue, and what I assume now, given my knowledge now, some kind of brother model from the 70s or 80s, a slim blue metal thing knocking around the house that I can have vague memories of kind of bashing away at that when I would have been 5 or 6. Having watched California Typewriter last year, I hit eBay like everyone does and found a Smith Corona Sterling. And that came and I was kind of blown away by the build quality of it and how it seemed to. It was still functioning, I hopped on YouTube and figured out how to clean it, gave it a quick clean, and suddenly it appeared to be, as good as new. So that was my first proper machine as an adult. But then I ended up, having to kind of restrain myself for fear of having this enormous collection growing out of hand. So I followed that up with a 1940s Quiet Deluxe, Royal Quiet Deluxe. And then in a thrift shop, maybe, I don't know, at the start of 2022, found an old brother, one of those ones that I was just talking about that I had as a kid, found another one of those for, I think, $4 or $5 Canadian, snapped that up, and me and my daughter gave it a paint job. We painted it bright yellow to go in her bedroom. She every so often tries to shove in a piece of paper. She's only 5 and has a crack typing little notes and messages and things like that. So it's interesting to see that she's grown up with iPads and YouTube and TV on demand and all of that, but there's this yellow typewriter in her bedroom, and she'll go and have a little play around on that completely unprompted, and seeing that even 5-year-olds of 2022. They're still drawn to these machines that clack away in the corner.
Well, absolutely, and rightfully so. Before we go any further, so you own 3 machines?
So I owned 3. I now own 2. I got rid of the Royal Quiet Deluxe simply because we are, as we record this, we are 1 week away from moving from Canada back to the UK.
Wow.
And we have stuff to ship, and the Quiet Deluxe didn't have a case. And I thought, I'm sorry, guy, you're going to have to continue to live out the rest of your years in Canada.
Wow.
So the Smith Corona Sterling, that has a case, that's going on the boat. The brother has a case, that's going on the boat, otherwise my daughter will kill me. But the Royal Quiet Deluxe, that has found a new home somewhere in Toronto.
Well, I think you are definitely the guest with the lowest number of typewriters ever in the history.
Well, I was conscious that we were going back to the UK, and I thought I have to maintain some kind of control, because if I end up with 12 or 15 or whatever of these things, I'm not sure how that's going to happen in terms of getting it back to the UK. So, yeah, ask me again in a year and it might be a different story. But for the time being, I've had a reason to be restrained.
Well, you heard it here, folks. We actually have people who are interested and into typewriters who don't have a room full of typewriters. That's really good stuff, my man. Well done. Well done. So when you move back to the UK, whereabouts will you be? You still going to be able to put out the newsletter and everything okay?
Yeah, that will continue as normal. We are moving back to our old house in Manchester. So we came over to Canada for my wife's work for a temporary thing. So we've been here 18 months. We go back to our old property in Manchester. We are swapping the 7 months of brutal winter that we get in Toronto for 7 months of brutal rain that we get in Manchester. So yeah, I'm not quite sure which is the lesser evil of those two.
Well, that's true. It's always fun being down here in the States. I'm in sunny Southern California. It gets a little warm in the summertime, but other than that, we're pretty mild and don't have to deal with any of that. So when you're writing copy, maybe give us a rundown of how writing copy goes for you throughout the day and what your career, how your career's gone and led you to putting out a cool newsletter about typewriters.
Yeah, so I started off as a sports journalist back in the late 90s when I was still at school. Did all the kind of typical journalism things, you know, worked a lot for not a lot, and had a reasonable amount of success. I was kind of, you know, I was a sports writer on national newspapers in the UK. But print journalism, I think, like everywhere in the world, faces its challenges, and it's probably not a long-term career for someone who at that stage maybe, you know, still had 30 years of work ahead of them. There probably isn't that longevity in print journalism. You know, I'd been developing this interest on the side in marketing. I ended up making the switch. I went and worked for a marketing agency for a while, and then, you know, slowly found my way heading into the world of copywriting. So writing marketing or advertising stuff, that is, you know, that's my bread and butter. That's 90% of my week. And then Typetown takes up a couple of hours that are, for me, more enjoyable. You know, that's my time where I can do something that isn't at the client's beck and call. The process is reasonably similar, I think, for all writing. You know, it's you know, people think that there's some kind of magical process, and I think a lot of that is bluff from people who pretend that it is. I think for most people, it is wait until the deadline's uncomfortably close, and then hit the keyboard in a mild state of panic, and somehow figure a way forward, and hope that you get to the end in one piece. I think that's most people's approach.
Myself as a writer, I love self-editing. I just think it's terribly enjoyable to take some piece of crap that I've written out and put it together into something good several days later. But then I have to sit on it even more and wait for that. But if you're busy, you know, writing copy, you got to be on it, and it's got to be good.
Do try to leave 24 hours, though. I always try to get stuff done at least 24 hours before the deadline. So I create a fake deadline in my own head so that I can have it done, put it in a folder on the computer, walk away from it, come back the next day with fresh eyes, and as you've just said, edit the heck out of it and try and get it into decent shape.
Okay.
The same goes with the newsletter. You know, it goes out on a Friday, and generally it's written on a Thursday, and then on Friday morning it's chopped about a bit, and all the waffle is cut down, hopefully. So hopefully there's not much waffle in there, and I can hit publish and forget about it for a fortnight.
Well, and that's my favorite part about the newsletter, that it really is short enough. You know, I can just sit for 10 or 12 minutes and enjoy all that you've written, sometimes less, you know, because there's not too much... there's not too much fluff thrown into it, and I really do appreciate that. I am a big fan of your newsletter, so.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Yeah, I think the biggest time suck in it is if people are interested in reading the links. You know, I try to keep the actual newsletter reasonably short and sparse. I think there'll be, I don't know, two or three stories, but those stories might only be eight sentences each. You know, it's kind of quite fast paced. People can read it over a coffee at lunchtime or something like that on their phone, and have 5 minutes, and then just hopefully it's not too daunting when they see that email drop into their inbox. They don't have to kind of sit and think, oh God, that's 15 minutes that I've got to find and, you know, delete, you know, hopefully.
Right. No, I really enjoy that too. I think it's well laid out. I enjoy that greatly. And I think we should probably, for the listeners, we should tell them what a fortnight is for us American types who like to say every
other week. Is that not a thing here?
No, we just say every other week. Or we say bi-weekly, which never made much sense to me either. But
I've been here, as I say, I've been in North America for 18 months. I'm still getting the hang of stuff that doesn't make sense. Someone asked me the time the other day, and I said it was 7:30, and they looked at me completely blank.
Wow.
Apparently the thing in Canada is 7:30. They had no idea what 7:30 is. So there's all these weird little differences between the UK and North America that I'm finding out to my embarrassment every day.
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. You need not be embarrassed. You just have to accept that we're not educated in the same way you are. And Canada is completely different from the United States. That's the funnier part. At least we think there is, but we're fortunate enough to have the great neighbors to the north. Well, for most of the U.S., Canada's to the east, really, but I think most people refer to it as neighbors to the north, you know, but if you were to draw the lines, you could see a lot of Canada's east. No, it's definitely a different world than from Southern California, but that's a wonderful thing about anything, even something like typewriters. We'll get people from all over the world, and we may speak different languages and write in different languages or have different nuances to our language, whatever it may be. It's going to be okay because we all enjoy typewriters.
Yeah, and that's something I'm conscious of. So the vast majority of the stuff that I've written about so far in Typetown has been English-speaking authors. And I'm conscious that there is a bigger world out there and that I need to start. We've had a few Spanish-speaking authors because I speak a bit of Spanish myself. So there's a little bit of interest there. We've had a few Spanish-speaking authors, but I really need to start throwing the net a bit wider and seeing who else we can dig up, because, you know, you see typewriters with all the different alphabets from all over the world. There's clearly stuff being pumped out throughout the entire 20th century from every country in the world. And I need to look a bit broader than the US and the UK.
You're right. There's a lot out there. I can only imagine. I'm in my little world in Southern California recording a podcast for Austin Typewriters, Inc. And Austin's exciting because it really is the center of the U.S., even though you'd have to go much more north to be in the geographical center. But maybe per capita, it makes a good center for the U.S. that can bring everything together. But there's a lot of good things happening in other places. I love the idea of Spanish writing. You know, good for you. If someone can pick up Typetown in the future in Espanol, you'll really have something.
Oh, no.
Oh, really?
No, I'm not promising to write the thing in a different language, but I think I need to feature some authors of different languages.
Sure.
I could have a very rudimentary crack at writing something, but it wouldn't come across with hopefully the same level of competence that I can muster in English.
You heard it here, folks. If for any reason you happen to be well-versed in Espanol, it looks like there's a copywriting job for you over in Manchester, England.
There we go. We'll take all comers. Yeah, I think there's been the odd hola or something like that at the start of the newsletter, but there's certainly I'm not going to be writing it in Spanish anytime soon.
Yeah, do you ever see it? Do you ever see a future in printing it?
So when I had the first idea of this, I was I was kind of exploring the typewriting community online before I kind of started it, and you know, I was coming across these old blogs, what do they call them, typecast, where they typing it on a piece of paper and putting a picture of it up, and for a while I did toy with doing this like that, but no, I'm so glad I didn't make that decision. It would have just driven me up the wall.
Right.
It would have taken so much longer in terms of my 24 hours of panic that happen when the issue goes out.
Right.
Would have had to have lasted at least 72 hours, I reckon, to write the thing on the computer and then type it out and then make sure it was all right. So yeah, I don't think it'll be typewritten anytime soon, unless some very rich benefactor decides to come along and insist that it's typewritten, and then I might be able to find the time.
It could happen. You just never know. What do you see? How can people subscribe to your newsletter?
So go online, head to typetown.substack.com, and a little sign up box will turn up, and then once a fortnight you will see something on a Friday normally drop into your email, and if you don't like it, hit unsubscribe. And if you do like it,
read it,
leave a comment and read it.
Read it and enjoy it.
Better still, share it with someone. Tell someone else about it, because you guys who are part of the typewriter community a lot more time than I am, you've been around for a lot longer than I have, you guys know everyone. So if there's, you know, if you read it and you like it, send it on to someone else who messes around with typewriters.
That's pretty good. And that's what I'm doing my best to do right now by having you as a guest on the podcast, as I am a fan of Typetown. I think, again, it's just nice and relaxing. I think, too, the difference in media almost, I appreciate it still on a computer screen, but something different, something cool about typewriters, fun facts I didn't know. And it's not so much about the making or manufacturing of typewriters. I know you've done some of that, but a lot of it is how people are using typewriters in their process, who's used them, what they've written. You know, there's so many good books that have been in our human history that have been written on typewriters.
Well, I mean, you think, you know, pretty much everything barring the last 10 years of the 20th century, everything in the 20th century will have come, or the vast majority would have come through typewriters, wouldn't it? You know, there'll be a few that were handwritten and then typed up by a secretary or something like that, but the vast majority of, you know, had an author sitting at a desk bashing away on a typewriter. And there's a lot to go at in that time. But you're right, yeah, there's nothing about mechanics or models or anything like that, because that's not my wheelhouse. You know, I know 1% of what other people know about that kind of stuff, so I've never pretended or tried to write about that, because I would be found out in about 5 seconds.
However, you very much know about writers and writing, whether it's, you know, whether it's novel writing or copywriting or whatever it may be, and that's what's exciting. You're really bringing that to the typosphere.
Yeah, it's well, that was my aim, was to just do something different. I could, you know, I knew that I couldn't contribute in terms of, you know, I don't know, when I see a Joe Van Cleef video on YouTube and he's pulling apart some typewriter and explaining what this thing does and this little nut and bolt and all of that kind of stuff. You know, I can't remotely compete with that, and nor would I try. But I thought, well, there is a different side to these machines in terms of their output, you know, and what they've been responsible for and what they've given us culturally. And hopefully kind of combine that interest and that kind of historical reflection with, you know, a bit of fun in the writing and a bit of silliness every now and then. And hopefully that that combination keeps people engaged. It seems to be doing at the moment.
Did you hear that Tom Hanks is coming out with a new book?
Like all typewriter nerds, I've had my Tom Hanks letter. Going back to California Typewriter, I've been fortunate to meet or interact with 3 of the people that were featured in there. So I've had my Tom Hanks letter.
Nice.
Martin Howard, who's the collector who's featured, he's looking for a Scholes and Glidden in California Typewriter.
Right.
He happens to live in Toronto, so we went out for lunch a couple of months ago. And Jeremy Mayer, the sculptor who makes these amazing pieces of work out of old typewriters.
Amazing.
In my professional life, I interviewed him about 6 months ago. So I've been really, really fortunate to have enjoyed the company of Jeremy and Martin. And obviously I've had my Tom Hanks letter. So out of that California Typewriter bunch, David McCullough obviously is sadly no longer with us. But yeah, I've had interactions with 3 of them. So that's my piece of typewriter nerdery.
Good for
you. That I can, you know, smile about.
Yeah, good for you. And that's the best part about people into typewriters. They're tangible most of the time. You know, you want to talk typewriters or talk typewriter process writing, whatever. They really are that exciting of a machine, and they're happy to sit down and chop with you. How is Jeremy Mayer? That guy seems real. I've messaged with him a few times back and forth. I should get him on the show soon enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was absolutely great. You know, he was so generous with his time. You know, we just did a Zoom call, but he showed me around his workshop on this call, and, you know, showed me the pieces that he was working on. We spoke for about an hour for a magazine feature that I was doing. But yeah, he was so generous and so patient with someone who doesn't know much about art, you know. And he was kind enough to message me after the piece had come out, you know, saying that he really enjoyed it and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was a fascinating hour to be let inside the inner workings of, you know, of an artist's studio and environment and process. Yeah, he was a great chat, and he'd be fantastic if you could get him on here.
Yeah, I concur. How exciting for you. Do you get to travel a lot then in your professional day job?
Well, I travel from the kitchen to the spare bedroom, which constitutes my office.
That's a walk. You know, that's a walk. Yeah. It counts.
Yeah. There's 16 steps or whatever there is. So there's some exercise there. You know.
Yeah.
Not much in the way of rush hour traffic. You know, it's a reasonably smooth ride into work most days.
That's great.
But yeah, no. Generally, like so many people after COVID, work from home the vast majority of the time now. Although that'll change a bit when we get back to the UK. But most of the time, I can be found tinkering in an office, bashing my head against a desk, trying to find something even semi interesting to write.
Right, that's pretty good. Well, good for you. Keep up the good work and. We wish you good travels and you're moving back to Manchester. Sounds very exciting.
Yeah, it'll be very wet, I think. But yeah, we're looking forward to it. Yeah. It's the first time that I've ever flown into the UK in November, knowing that I'm going to be 15 degrees warmer than I am now. Normally, if you fly into the UK in November, it's going to be miserable. And I checked the weather forecast today and Manchester is currently 15 degrees warmer than Toronto, so it's going to feel tropical.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, good luck with it all, and we can't thank you enough for being a guest here today on Austin Typewriters, Inc. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a great show, and you know, you do so much for the typewriter community, and I'm very, very fortunate and privileged to have been invited on, so thank you, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the Austin Typewriter, Inc. podcast. For more information about our group, please find us online at austintypewriterinc.com, or you can also visit us on Facebook and Instagram. Join us next time for another episode of Austin Typewriter, Inc. May your type slugs always be clean.